Hey, right, welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Somebody is crazy enough to come back for a second interview. Her award-winning film, and yes, I mean award-winning, like Emmy award-winning. That means people, thousands and thousands of people know what this film is. Well, it probably did when it came out. Welcome back, Roberto Cantar. Welcome with your film Clothesline. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me back.
So you start off the film. Before we even get into it, you said, for my sister Claire, at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Why is it for your sister?
I was making the film over a period of several years, four at least. And during that time, my sister became ill. And there was a period where I was taking care of her while I was making the film. And by the time I finished the film, she had passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I dedicated it to her.
Well, that's very nice of you. I just wanted to know. I wanted to know if she helped out or...
Nobody ever asked that question, so it's interesting that you did.
I'm sorry, then.
Well, there's nothing to be sorry about. You're paying attention. That's how I read it.
Well, I do try to pay attention. When people send me things, I like looking for those little details that people don't normally ask. So who's the narrator of the film?
Well, it's the variety of women that I interviewed who narrate the film. There's quite a collection of them, and they're all, an array of different voices, different accents, mostly all New York-based, New York City and environs, but with a lot of diversity within that. a variety of Jewish women, Irish women, Italian women, white women without a particular ethnic identity, etc.
When you went looking for these women, did you have anybody that said no?
It's interesting that you're asking me that because somebody else asked me that recently, and the answer is no. No, there was nobody who said, no, thank you. Everybody was intrigued, even if at the beginning they didn't get why I would be making a film, which basically they identified as about laundry. You know, the title, Clotheslines. Why do you want to make a film about that? You know, and there's that association, negative association, hanging your dirty laundry out, you know, for all to see. So, but they were willing in spite of that.
So I guess we have to ask, even though I asked you last time about accordions, this time I'm going to ask you, why laundry?
Well, I have said this before, that I seem to be drawn to the misunderstood. So the idea of making this film came to me in pieces. And at first, I was just interested in the visual image of clotheslines. I thought they were beautiful. And I shot a lot of them and was very intrigued with all the variety of the different types of clotheslines, you know, whether it was billowing sheets or shirts representing, you know, the bulk and body of men or the under things that would be hung out, sometimes hidden, sometimes not. So that was what got me going. But then the more I was engaged with the subject, the more I felt that clotheslines were emblematic of the work of women that we don't see, and that the only thing we see is what women hang out on the line. And I thought that there were some interesting things to be explored about that.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I kind of did not know where this film was going to go at the beginning. I will fully say I had no idea. And I really felt the film evolved from the laundry. I lost interest in the laundry, if that makes sense, and I was interested in their stories.
Okay.
And how they would discuss things like, my husband didn't help me. He always wore white to work. That drew me in. and stuff that the laundry was a way to communicate. Everybody tells stories at the laundry.
Right. And yeah, at the laundry or over the clothesline.
Yes. And I thought the film changed at that point. Once you started hearing what they were up to, your film, it wasn't about the laundry, it was about the people. Did you find that too?
Well, it is definitely about the people. It's about I actually see it as the story of women of a particular time. I see the film as a historical document at this point, because not that nobody hangs clothes anymore or nobody deals with the kinds of issues that were discussed in the film. It refers specifically to a time when everybody hung their clothes, and doing so what had a variety of meanings and importance to the women. So, you know, that's changed to some extent. I'm sure there are places where it still exists, but there are places today, this is an interesting point, where you're not allowed to hang a clothesline. It is against the homeowner association rules. In some cases, it's against the city ordinance. The reason is because it's considered unsightly. So there's been this push against that, because the other thing that hanging clothes outdoors is that it's a energy saver. You know, you're not using the dryer to use up all the electricity. And so there are people out there, various movements to counteract those decrees.
Sorry about that. I will agree with you. I did find the film very historical. Seeing stuff I barely remember as a kid, like the old washing machines and just the clothes. My favorite line was one of the women say, "You get judged by the way you hang your clothes." And I never ever would have thought of that.
Yeah, it's a really important point, and I harp on it more than once in the film, because it refers to a variety of things. Not only are they white or not, but, you know, is there a spot on them, and what does that say about the kind of mother or housewife you are? And the other thing, of course, that I has always was the most intriguing to me was the way women would discuss that. Okay, they didn't enjoy it that much, but if they had to do it, they'd get the most out of it. And so it became a creative endeavor. So they'd hang by color or by shape or something else, because they knew that the neighbors, and especially the women neighbors, were going to be looking at those lines, and that they revealed something about the person who sent the clothesline out to the world.
And lines like she's going around with different underwear and stuff like that just amazed me that people are looking at other people's clothes that much.
Right. That was, yeah, it's not that she's fooling around with people's underwear. The idea was she's fooling around, and you can tell by the underwear she wears.
Yes.
That she must have a boyfriend. Yeah. And that's humorous, you know, but I mean, that was what people got from it.
I mean, and stuff like, it's a status thing, doing the laundry, because you have a man. You can see the man's clothes in the laundry. Stuff like that. I'm just like, what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I feel in some ways these are, you know, the secrets among women that would never otherwise be known. Yeah, I think the film is revealing in that way.
Oh, I have to agree with you. Like I said, I found this film fascinating on so many levels. I guess I have to start. I mean, you said you were fascinated. Were you living in New York City at this time, or were you just showing up for some reason?
I was living in New York at the time. Yeah.
Did you approach your friends to do the film then?
You mean, were my friends in it?
Yes.
No. Not really. I had some collaborators, people, maybe I should call them consultants. One of them was a urban anthropologist, and she gave me some suggestions about organizations that I should connect with, where I could find women who were, you know, deeply immersed in these activities. My friends weren't. So I needed to find the ones who were. And I was sent to an organization called National Congress of Neighborhood Women, which was based in Brooklyn. And got a bunch of people from there. And they were just, you know, chomping at the bit to tell their stories. And then other people, I remember being somewhere where someone was, an older woman walked by. She was curious, what are you doing? I was shooting at a museum, some laundry contraption. So when I told her what I was doing, she says to me, oh, I could tell you stories. I said, well, great, let's do it. And she lived in New Jersey. I drove out to New Jersey. She is the voice that carries the film from beginning to end, the older woman's complaining voice throughout.
How hard was it to be a woman filmmaker this time doing documentaries?
You know, the hardest thing for me was I was fortunate to have gotten funding from the New York State Council on the Arts, and that gave me a lot of encouragement that I wasn't just, you know, shooting in the dark. There was interest in what I was doing, and that was important. The other thing that was hard was the tripod I had at the time was made of wood and had a metal head on top of it. And so carrying it in the back of my car and lifting it in and out of the car repeatedly day after day, that was hard. I mean, I just remember it required a lot of energy. The actual making of the film, I mean, it's as hard as anybody making films anytime. You have to make time for it. You give up a lot to do it. It happens usually, not for everyone, but for me it was over a period of at least 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And life goes on all the while, you know. So I think it just goes with the territory. It's just, I don't think it had to do with me being a woman. It's just what goes with the territory of making films.
Did you learn anything about laundry you didn't know?
Everything. I mean, that was not a picture of me or my life. It was nothing that I knew personally. There was a family that lived across the street when I was growing up. They had 10 children, and they had plenty of laundry that they hung in the driveway for, actually, for all to see. But we didn't have that. And we, meaning my family, we had a clothes dryer. And the only time we hung anything on the line was when we were drying off the towels for our makeshift swimming pool that my dad had built for us. So all the meanings, the embedded meanings, I mean, when I talk about this film, I refer to the fact that the topics range from the pain, the loneliness, the isolation, the drudgery, to the folklore, the humor, the wisdom, and the creativity involved in this single task, which of course is not only hanging clothes, but things that go with it, folding, ironing, etc. And that this film is that story.
Oh, I think you hit all those at home. I mean, it's a fascinating, like I said, to learn all these things. And the other thing, I'm very creative. You brought the word creative. Is your music.
Yeah.
You have a very nice, you let the wind be your music. You have a flute being your music. That's very inventive to me.
Inventive? Can you say more why you say that?
Yeah, because you don't hear it often in films. You don't overlay anything. The flute just fits in nice with the laundry. So you're looking at the laundry and the flute music. The wind, it was great. It didn't interrupt your film. That's why I liked it. A lot of directors will put something in to interrupt the film, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, now I understand.
And
okay.
You let the film speak for itself, I found.
You should know that I was very fortunate to connect with a composer. Her name was Alice Eve Cohen. She had a reputation for working not exclusively, but to a large extent, with homemade instruments, most of which were in her kitchen or what have you. One of them, it may be the flute you're referring to, was actually, I mean, there may have been an authentic flute, but there was also a toy that you, in those days, swirl in the air around and around. That was that high-pitched note that I think you're referring to. And it was a perfect marriage, the music that she produced for the film, I agree. And then there was also a soundtrack separate from the music, which was my contribution. And that was all kinds of things as well that you wouldn't expect to be in a documentary film. For example, there's a image of children or nature, and I added the sound of singing swans because it had a haunting sound, and that's the kind of feeling I was trying to create, even though you never saw any swans in the film.
I don't even know what, I mean, I wish I could ask more questions, but it's just, it's very basic in what it is, but it's so depth in what it is. Cause it's more the people's stories you got to listen to than me to talk about or you to talk about. So let's continue on. You finished the film. What did you do with it? I mean, this is the '70s. We don't really have, or I think it's '70s you filmed this in, Joe?
I finished it in the early 80s.
Okay, but it looks like you started in the 70s, so just by the way the laundry machines work and things to me.
Yeah.
So where do you put your film at this point? You've packaged it up. I mean, you've edited it. What do you do with it?
Well, back in those days, I mean, we didn't have DVDs and we didn't have digital delivery. All we had was the actual 16-millimeter film, and I was very fortunate that at the time, Filmmakers Library, which is an educational distributor, they were interested in the film. They took it on and they promoted it. So every time that film sold to a university, I was entitled to 25% of that sale. And the sale involved the cost of the film plus the markup, which was probably $500 each time. So, and there were universities willing to pay that in those days. There were no other options. So, it got sold to quite a lot of places. And they still are distributing it now. It's certainly still available in 16 millimeter. Nobody's asking for it, but it is available as well on DVD and it's available for streaming. So universities may purchase a package of several films they're interested in, and then they'll have the license to stream this one as often as they want within a certain time period. It means much less income for the filmmaker, but here it is all 37 years later, and it's still earning money.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is just awesome news. It's just not sitting on your shelf going, yeah, it's right here. You want to borrow it?
Well, you know, the other thing to say is, how can I put this? I struggled in the making of the film. I struggled to be confident about what I was doing on the one hand. Is this really viable and valuable? And I struggled about the placement, you know, where does it begin? Where does it end? What do I start with? How does it evolve? Where's the story? I mean, all the questions that you have to ask as an editor. And I didn't have confidence when I first finished it that anything would happen to it other than that I could call it done. Whew, at least it's off my back, you know. And I was very pleasantly surprised at the interest and accolades that it got. And it's only as a result of that I came to understand what I had done and how unique it was. Because I was just, I don't know, just doing what was inside me, really, you know, putting it out there.
So I guess I have to ask you, do you have unused footage still from laundry? Or did you use everything you shot, pretty much?
Oh, no, I did not use everything I shot. But I don't still have it either. I mean, what I have is the whether it's the negative material or the preservation materials, because at one point the Donnell Film Library in New York undertook a preservation of that film as well.
Oh, wow.
That was special funding that they've gotten.
That is great. So how did the Emmys get a hold of you? Or were you surprised to getting an Emmy nomination for the film?
I'm surprised for sure, but it came about, I did not submit it. It was first shown on WNET, which is the public television station in New York. And they submitted it for consideration. And all I found out was your film has been nominated. And I went to that award ceremony, and I thought they were listing the recipients. They named them one by one, and they had passed either the name of the film or my name. They had, you know, as far as alphabetical. So I just felt like, well, okay. I mean, I'm here at this award ceremony, but I didn't get it. And then they called my name. And I had the experience of walking up to the lectern, podium, whatever it was, and literally feeling what people describe as rubber knees. I actually had that sensation. So it was a big surprise.
So hold on, we got to back this up. Did you have a speech prepared?
No, that's part of the point. It didn't occur to me at all. It just didn't occur to me. And there, you know how at these events they start playing music if you've gone on too long talking, you know, and the music, I mean, first I was trying to just formulate what I was even going to say, and before I knew it, that music came on, and I remember shouting at them, don't do that to me. But I managed to get in the appropriate thank yous, etc.
So you leave the Emmy ceremony. What do you do with your Emmy?
I brought it home, and I still have it. I admire it from time to time. It gives me courage. I was a little bit shy about announcing. I don't know. You know, it's that kind of thing. Like, didn't want to sound like I was boasting and was afraid I might have friends who would be jealous. So I was very – it's not that I didn't it's not that I didn't love that I had received this award, but I was uncomfortable sharing the news.
So, I mean, even with me, I would say in our last interview, you kind of just spit it out, I guess is the easiest way to say, oh, I won an Emmy. I'm like, pardon? You never brought that up. But to me, that's a big deal.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say.
I guess I'm saying you still feel very humble about it, I guess is what I'm trying to say this many years later.
Well, that film, let's be frank, it's not first and foremost in my mind because it's not wasn't completed anywhere recently. And yeah, you know, let me put it like this. It's not the only award that film won. That film won many awards in many different film festivals. So, you know, what am I going to do? Shout out, oh, actually, that film won this, and this award. You know, it's like at a certain point, it's just what it is. You know, you either are intrigued or you're not.
I don't know. To me, an Emmy's pretty big, an Oscar's pretty big. To me, that's, you did it.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was ever a podcasting award and I won something for that, I'd be happy. It would be right there behind me. Every time you look at me, it would be right on my wall going, look at mine. But I wouldn't say anything to people, but I probably would have it in my house and point
right.
at it.
Right. Yeah. And that's the case now.
But I think that's wonderful. I think what you've done, I don't think you even realize it. It's an amazing film on something that for somebody my age and people my age don't really remember.
Right. It wouldn't occur. Well, even people my age, you know, I mean, in other words, even at the time, there were people who, A, didn't get what I was doing, wondered why the hell I was doing it. And it was only when the film was completed that it came across to people in a way that, you know, they could say you did something very special.
Well, you know? I think you did. But I did make some new fun questions for you.
Okay.
Because I know you love random questions because it throws you off completely. So I'm very excited.
I would just like to make one point about the film.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
I want people to know the length, okay? It is not a feature-length film. It's 32 minutes.
And worth watching.
Yes. Okay. That too.
Yes. I love it. Okay. Since it's October, your favorite horror film?
I'm not a fan of horror films. And there's a film whose title I can't remember, unfortunately. It features a little girl who is, it's probably a foreign film, and she's visited by Frankenstein in a location like a cemetery, I think.
That's Frankenstein.
No, this was different. I'm sorry to say I don't know the title. I'm bad at remembering titles.
Don't worry about it. Your favorite musical?
Oh, boy. Musicals are not my favorite either.
Oh, I'm trying here.
Yeah, I can tell you that I certainly did enjoy West Side Story at the time, and that was, it had a pull at the time.
Your favorite theater you've ever been to in New York City?
Well, my favorite theater has always been either off or off Broadway material. So one of them was La Mama. That was a theater that I frequently went to.
I think that's still there.
La Mama ETC, and I would assume that it still is. And I very much loved going to the Next Wave theater events at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. So I saw any number of really interesting theatrical events there in a certain time period.
I guess my last question before I let you go, which has got no fun questions, this is a serious question. Was it hard being a woman filmmaker in the early 80s?
Good question. Don't forget, you're going to give me a chance to tell people where they can see Clothesline.
I will. I promise. That's at the very end.
Okay. But I think you kind of asked the question because you asked, was it hard being a filmmaker?
Yeah,
was it hard being a woman filmmaker? I think the challenge for me was figuring out what I was doing. I mean,
okay. You
know, it was going after something that I wanted, and that would have been true no matter what I was choosing to do, because we're talking about going from my 20s into my 30s. That's around the age I was when I made Clothesline. And it was a matter of marking my direction and, you know, just forging ahead. And I think no matter what I chose to do, that aspect would have been there.
Sorry about that. Usually I asked that earlier, but just the way you're talking, it like clicked into my head. So, yeah, tell everybody where you can find Clotheslines, because this film's awesome.
Thank you. It's on a website called Real House, double E. So it's www.realhouse.org, and you can use the search bar, type in the name of the film, Clotheslines. It's available for download and for streaming. There you go.
Thank you so much for coming back. You're always awesome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for having me. Are we still going to do the other one?
Yes, we will. I promise.
Okay, got it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.